Okay, so we've come to the third debate, which can be stated as: this house believes that the quantum state is real. On the affirmative side, we have Shreya, Nathan, and Brock. And on the negative side, we have Tom, Morton, and Mike. And as before, we'll start with a preliminary vote. So who agrees with the affirmative side? No. So you can abstain from voting. Okay. So we have zero people believing the quantum state is real. Oh, one. Okay. One person believes that the quantum state is real. And who does not believe that the quantum state is real? That's nine. Okay. One for affirmative, nine for negative. So let's start with the first speaker on the affirmative.
Good afternoon. So this house believes that the quantum state is real. So now let's first define what we mean by real. Now, so we start with, now consider quantum, consider classical mechanics. There, we can get a clear distinction between what we call an ontic state and what we call an epistemic state. An ontic state is what is the one that describes reality. And for the purpose of this debate, we assume that there is an existing reality. Otherwise, I guess this debate becomes meaningless. And an epistemic state means that we only know the knowledge about the reality and not reality itself. Now, in classical mechanics, consider like if we know x and p, that the position and momentum of a state, that is a point in phase space, then we can say that that knowledge or that state is an ontic state. So, and suppose we don't know the exact value of x and p, then the knowledge can be represented by a probability distribution over x and p, and that probability distribution would be our epistemic state. So in general, a single phase space point can belong to more than one probability density functions because it depends on what you know about the state. And so okay, I'll just draw it. These are two probability distributions. And on the x-axis is the set of like, ontic states. Now, suppose we impose the restriction that there can be no overlap between the two probability distributions. Then, if you know the ontic state, then you will know what the epistemic state is, or you will know which probability distribution it belongs to. And so it's like the epistemic state would be more like a property of the ontic state and not something that represents knowledge by itself. So we say that this represents an ontic state, and this is our definition of reality. Now, in case of quantum states, we could say that the x-axis represents, say, lambda, which is some real parameter, I mean, a real state, and the probability distribution can be psi, the wave function as we know it. And so our house claims that the second diagram is what psi looks like. That is, different values of lambda gives a different value of psi. Now, PBR theorem, it was proved that if the quantum state represents merely information about the real physical state, then we have experimental predictions that contradict quantum theory. And this is based on two assumptions that Nathan will get, will state.
Crikey, look at that quantum state up there. Ain't she a beauty? Now, the affirmative team are trying to tell you that that thing's real, but don't let them fool you. That state's been picking up a complex phase for the last 13.6 billion years, which means it's got an imaginary part, and that means it ain't real. I rest my case. Okay, back to reality. We accept the affirmative team's definition of reality of the quantum state. As no final theory of the universe exists, we intend to prove that the epistemic approach is far more likely to produce such a theory than the ontic. Our argument will succeed when we have demonstrated that assuming the wave function is real brings unnecessary problems and sacrifices the natural interpretation of quantum theory. I will describe the problems that arise, some of the problems that arise when the quantum state is assumed real. Professor Morton, will then describe current epistemic models of quantum theory. These give a more natural interpretation of quantum mechanics, of quantum weirdness, and escape the aforementioned problems. Finally, Mike will refute the paltry arguments of these Scientologists and unify our arguments into one glorious whole. For the affirmative team to defeat our case, they must both give resolutions to the problems posed and demonstrate compelling advantages of their additional assumption. We believe this to be impossible. Now, the affirmative team, Shreya, has cited the PBR theorem, and she's claimed that this disproves the epistemic viewpoint. However, this theorem rests on, among other things, the assumption that there exists a set of states of reality that can be separated into component parts without loss of information. For a Scientologist, this assumption can be justified by the existence of product states in quantum mechanics. But as pointed out by people such as Rob Speckens, this justification already assumes the quantum state is real, which makes it a circular argument. We challenge the affirmative team to fix this hole, to argue for the separability of a special class of quantum states when separability is well known to not be able to hold in general. It causes problems with entanglement. Otherwise, the PBR theorem only places restrictions on the class of possible epistemic models and does not preclude their existence at all. However, now, assuming the quantum state is real gives problems that no ontic model has yet overcome. This is a measurement problem mentioned in the first debate. Quantum mechanics allows us to predict measurements in an experiment, but the quantum state itself is vastly different from what we observe in said experiment. For example, quantum mechanics gives the possibility of a particle's wave function being spread out over an arbitrarily large region of space, but when we measure the position of the particle, we find it only at a single point. In an epistemic model, this makes perfect sense. The spread of the wave function represents the lack of our knowledge of the particle's true location, rather than details of the particle itself. However, for an ontic interpretation, we require a mechanism for the particle state to suddenly collapse down to a point. Most importantly, we need to explain why this mechanism should be allowed only when we measure and never otherwise. We also need a mechanism to explain how the specific point was chosen over the many other possibilities. And finally, we need to explain how this collapse could occur at all points in space, which is at odds with notions of relativity. To this day, no ontic theory can satisfactorily explain this result that flows naturally out of an epistemic model. Our next speaker, Morton, will describe such a theory, the Speckens toy model, and he will show how not only this, but many other examples of quantum strangeness can be described in a natural manner. And Mike shall come to our rescue should the Scientologists make any point that seems remotely reasonable. The affirmative team will not be able to provide such compelling incentives for taking an ontic viewpoint as we have for an epistemic. Neither will they be able to solve the problems that I've described using any psiontic model. As such, we've explained that the wave function should not be considered a real physical object. Crikey, it's coming right at me!
Good afternoon. So, I agree that you did make one reasonable statement. You do need a complex Hilbert space to represent your wave function. That is true. But there's no other way in which the wave function is not real. You cite the measurement problem as a problem for our models, but not yours. But that is simply because your assumption is that it just represents information. And so but your assumption that it represents information is based solely on an easy resolution of the measurement problem. But there are psi-ontic models which also resolve this. The collapse models deal with it directly. And others such as the de Broglie-Bohm also do not have a problem with it. And you cite that there are psi epistemic models which will solve all the problems. But in fact, as far as I know, there's no natural psi epistemic model which reproduces all of quantum mechanics. Not only do we have real psi-ontic models, some of them make predictions which haven't been tested yet, but maybe in the future. Now, the widely cited Speckens model is called the Speckens toy model for a reason. It is a toy model. It doesn't reproduce contextuality, which some people think is one of the most important features of quantum mechanics. So I don't think Morton need mention it when he comes up. Now, there was also some talk of the separability of quantum states being required. Barak will deal with that. But there are also other no-go theorems. For example, last July, Cyril Branchiaud proved that no psi epistemic model can explain the indistinguishability of non-orthogonal quantum states. And this makes no assumptions other than the ontological framework, which you have accepted. Now, for a more heuristic argument, we can look to quantum computing. David Deutsch, founder of quantum computing, and some people would say he's the founder, pointed out that quantum computing aims to use the wave function to perform calculations faster than classical algorithms. It works by putting a quantum state in a superposition of all the inputs and doing some tricky math with the wave function to get the answer that you desire. Now, if the wave function was nothing but the probability amplitude, how could it give a real concrete speed up in the computation time? After all, the computation has to occur somewhere. And so to reiterate, there is only one sense in which the wave function is not real. Thank you.
The House of Scientologists will have you believe that the wave function is real primarily through an argument based on a no-go theorem. One example of this was mentioned by Shreya. It is the PBR theorem. Nathan mentions another one. However, a recent paper by Peter Lewis and others shows that if you have the assumption of reality, which I will point out is not necessary to have a coherent theory of quantum mechanics, but is, however, very convenient and attractive to most people. But if you have that assumption, but you relax a second assumption, which was the one Tom mentioned on the separability of the ontic states on product states, then it is possible to explicitly construct a psi-epistemic model as long as it is for a finite dimensional Hilbert space. Now, if you refute this second assumption, which is needed for instance, the PBR theorem, then you, therefore, it seems likely that a psi epistemic point of view can be made feasible. And for the toy model, the purpose of the toy model is not to give such a theory about quantum mechanics, but it is to show how aesthetic quantum mechanics become once you adapt a psi epistemic point of view. For in this model, which consists of a system where a particle can have four different positions, but you're only allowed to measure you're allowed to obtain a limited amount of information during measurements, then you can reproduce in behavior that is normally attributed strictly to quantum mechanics, such as no cloning theorem, teleportation, interference, and entanglement. So where the psiontologists need to come up with a model that deals with a measurement problem, and in doing so introduce other problems that also needs to be addressed, such that, for instance, the collapse models introduce new fundamental physical constants, then in fact, it seems like they're just introducing additional baggage which is not needed in order to get a good coherent understanding of quantum mechanics. Lastly, I want to point out that quantum mechanics most likely is not going to be an appropriate framework on which to base a theory on of everything. For instance, quantum gravity has failed to come up with one in quite a long time. So it's our contention that a psi epistemic point of view provides a more natural interpretation on which scientific progress can occur. So to reiterate, the assumptions on which the no-go theorems are based need to be accounted for by the psiontologists. It is not clear necessarily that that this assumption about preparation independence is true. And if you do not assume this, then it's possible to make a coherent psi epistemic model. And also, we believe that the psi epistemic model provides a much more aesthetic point of view on which to base future theories and to get a good understanding of quantum mechanical phenomena.
Okay, so now we have time for a couple of questions. Lucien?
Even though one can question the assumptions going into the PBR theorem, we still know from other theorems that to describe the wave function for a single, even for a single qubit, you need an infinite number of possible ontic states. So the question is whether the sort of explanation you're looking for within a psi epistemic model will ever actually work. In other words, the thing that you find appealing about the possibility of a psi epistemic model, that it might look a bit like the toy model of Speckens, may not be possible. So my question is, how do you respond to that?
So let me just make sure that I understand the question. You're saying that the ontological, the access baggage theorem proves that you would need an infinite number of ontic states to describe a single qubit, and thus in an epistemic, you're saying that one of the key draw cards for an epistemic model is the small number of parameters, but obviously we don't have that because of the excess baggage theorem. So I think epistemic models have more appeal to them than just a limited number of parameters. I think that the biggest appeal to me for an epistemic theory would be the probabilistic interpretation of collapse and dealing with that. And I think that that's definitely a problem, and it's something that, I mean, obviously all these no-go theorems give you restrictions on what epistemic models you can have, but it's not something that, it obviously isn't something that disproves epistemic models in general, and it's not something I think that makes them less attractive than ontic models, which would have exactly the same problem.
Are there any other questions, Ilan?
Could both sides please elaborate on what they think is the relation between quantum computation, as mentioned by Nathan, and the reality of the wave function?
Let's start with affirmative. Okay, let's go to negative.
Do you want to answer? Okay. We don't necessarily know at this point what the final epistemic theory will be, but it will be a probabilistic theory that's different than classical probabilistic theory, because otherwise it won't be able to encapsulate all of quantum phenomena at this point. So, I mean, it's an open question on our end, as far as I can tell.
Also, I think quantum epistemic models being motivated a lot by quantum information. And I think that the idea that the wave function does represent information in some way that feeds exactly feeds back into the quantum information outlook. I mean, currently stuff like Speckens toy model, or I guess the negative Wigner function approaches, these like probabilistic views are going right back into, like, people are actively researching this in terms of quantum computation, for example. Joe is.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I think the point of this argument is that if the quantum state is only a state of knowledge, of your, like, specific observer's knowledge, then you take it and you manipulate it in some ways and you find an answer to some question, but it's an objective question that is being answered. So where does the computation take place? You know, if we take a superposition of all the possible inputs, does that mean that I know all those possible, what does that even mean in a psi-epistemic model? No, but if psi is real, then I can say, yeah, it's a superposition of stuff that is real, and then I can take it and massage it until I get the answer that I want. So it's an objective thing, and not just, depending on whoever looks at the computer at that time.
Yes, something I did forget to say is that Speckens toy model does, one of its properties is that it has quantum computational speed up embedded, like it's something you can get from the model.
Okay, great. So now we can move on to the third speakers, and we'll start with the negative side.
I begin by saying that this house has accepted the grounds for the debate provided by the definition of the opposing party and the framework in which we are speaking about. Otherwise, it would be difficult to find a common ground to agree which to debate on. And this house rejects the notion that the quantum state is real in the current state of our understanding of the quantum theory. I dare say in the fantastic event that a newer theory better explains the state of a quantum system than we currently understand it, the current wave function is subject to unitary evolution in the absence of measurement, will prove to be at best the best fit as far as our knowledge of the system is concerned to the true state of the quantum system. This house maintains the stance that although a complete and successful theory that completely reproduces all the results of quantum mechanics, whether by ontological or epistemic prescriptions, the quality of quantum mechanics provide that epistemic models are most likely to lead to fundamental progress in physics and prove to be the more appropriate way of viewing the quantum state. Now, Tom spoke about the inability of ontological models to provide a satisfactory answer to the measurement problem, to which I believe Nathan spoke about models which deal with this problem, such as the collapse model and the De Broglie model. And we must say that we are not at all satisfied with these answers, because one of them is a zombie model and one of them really, I mean, the De Broglie model seems to be more like a zombie model, and the other one, the collapse model, doesn't give really satisfactory explanations as to what exactly collapse is and why it happens. Another point was raised by Nathan about, and Barak spoke a bit on this, about quantum computing relying on the reality of the quantum state to be possible. We also find this not very acceptable, because quantum computing is carried out in the framework of quantum theory, and quantum theory just doesn't do whatever we want it to do. It has a prescription, it has limits, it has a mathematical framework, and within this mathematical framework, you can use the physical behavior of quantum systems to do quantum computations. Also, they made mention of other no-go theorems that are supposedly rule out psi-epistemic models. We would want to say that unless they have specifically stated which no-go theorem that they are speaking about, to which we may question their assumptions, whether they are explicit or implicit, or also questions aspects of the argument that may or may not necessarily rule out completely psi-epistemic models, we will not accept that point in this debate to completely rule out our position. Okay. Furthermore, Morten spoke about the Speckens toy model, for example, which, based on allowing constraints on the knowledge that we are allowed to have, can produce a lot of the model effects of quantum mechanics. The position of our house by saying that on the grounds that ontic models cause complications which our opponents have not satisfactorily resolved, we are not satisfied with the answers. And that epistemic approach gives a stronger standing to 30 seconds. Okay, to understanding the way quantum mechanics behaves more easily and without too much confusion. We will maintain that the more appropriate way, or the appropriate way to view the quantum wave function in quantum theory, is to see it as real, not real. Thank you.
Well, I'm convinced. No, I'm not convinced. You're just saying that, well, the quantum state is not real. That doesn't make sense to me. Let's see, I just wrote down some stuff that I just thought about right in the last 5 seconds. So, okay, first of all, PBR and other no-go theorems. Yeah, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one. This is like 100 pages, and it has like all the no-go theorem. You should have done your homework. You can't just say, oh, they didn't tell which ones. Oh, here, you can read this, and, you know. Okay, so there are so many no-go theorems that say that psi-epistemic models don't work within the ontological model. And you know, some of them have weaker assumptions than the PBR theorem. Some of them have no assumptions, like the paper by, well, I throw it away. This paper by Brankyard says how psi-epistemic models fail at explaining the indistinguishability of quantum states, and it doesn't have any assumptions other than just there is a reality. So I would say that this is like a done deal. What else? Well, toy model, if you want to play with the toy model, you can play with it, it's a toy, but you know, unless you show me an actual model that reproduces all of quantum theory, I'm not convinced that you can make such a model. So You mentioned one model, the Lewis and friends, but that one is only for a fixed dimension. If you want to build a composite system out of that model, you can do that. So that's not really a model that can reproduce all of quantum mechanics. What else? Well, so many stuff that I can say, but so little time. You said something about baggage. Well, you know, any attempt at a more fundamental theory should have some additional stuff. So all of these models, like the collapse models or the Breuer-Bohm models that have some additional stuff, are, you know, they might be just in the direction of a more fundamental theory. So, I mean, it makes sense to me that we need to add some more stuff. I wouldn't say it's baggage that needs to be removed. Measurement problem. Well, all psiontic models were built in an attempt to solve and have solved the measurement problem. So there's really no, that's not really an argument. So you said you want a more aesthetic theory. Well, that's not really a scientific argument. I mean, QFT is really a very ugly theory, but it works, so we use it. A theory doesn't have to be beautiful in order to be true. I don't really accept that. What else? Well, I think I've pretty much made my case.
Thank you, Brock, for a dramatic case. Okay, so we can have a few more questions. Let's start with David.
So that's a question to Barak. When you say a theory doesn't have to be elegant or beautiful to be true, what precisely do you mean by being true?
I'm just saying that our own subjective notions as humans of what is beautiful or aesthetic doesn't necessarily mean anything objectively. Like a scientific theory can be nice but completely unrelated to reality, or it can be like the ugliest thing you've ever seen, but you know, it is a true theory that describes reality and, you know, has predictions that you can verify in experiment.
For being true.
Well, I mean, we can have like a 10-hour discussion of what true means, but I'm just saying that aesthetics is not a good criterion for what is true and what is not.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think the negative side would like to also comment on that.
Just a short comment. It's not to turn this debate into that, but I believe that, in my opinion, if you have two competing theories, then aesthetics is very much a criterion that scientists choose on. And you may call it Occam's razor, you may call it various things, but I think that aesthetics is in some way, when choosing between competing theories with the same predictive power, is very much an important issue.
Are there any other questions over here?
So I have a question for both sides. Is there a possibility that the quantum state is real for some time, for some phases during the evolution, and not real during other phases? I think it pertains to both sides, because if you, for example, argue for the reality of the quantum state, you have to state which precise argument you are arguing for.
I don't think I've ever heard that idea before, but I would worry that it kind of goes against the notions of general relativity, because two points separate in space being at the same time is kind of like if you drop simultaneity, then that sounds like it would be very hard to rectify.
In this setup, we have assumed implicitly that there is, to begin with, some value in that one-dimensional here depicted ontic space. And to say that sometimes the state is real and sometimes it's not, in this particular definition of real, being that the distributions don't overlap, meaning it's real, I don't really know what it would mean for
what
it
if
to be...
The ontological space makes some changes, some drastic changes, that it changes form. And then, or maybe...
It sounds like in a model like this, you'd have, you know, it sounds like you would allow, say, the wave functions to overlap in the ontic space. And then it just at rare, you know, I guess then at which point, the point where they don't overlap sounds like it would be a rarity. And that sounds like you would, I guess, have you like that would effectively be an epistemic viewpoint that allows at some time for the wave functions to completely separate and then to recombine. So I'd say that would I would call that a victory for us if that was turned out to be true, but you know, I'm biased.
I'm not sure I understood what you mean exactly, but under the framework in which we are working, we have an exact definition of what an ontic state is, and an exact proof that, you know, the quantum state corresponds to an ontic state. So
I guess
it can't just one time, like the proof cannot be time dependent because it is a proof, you know.
So what if this framework is not a faithful description of reality? What if, for example, half an hour ago I have some quantum state that is real for some objects, but then right now it changed into something not real anymore?
Then, well, that means that
because we are arguing about the reality of the quantum state.
The quantum state being real is just, I think, another way of saying that a quantum state is a property of real objective physical reality. So it's like kind of like energy, right? So energy can't be real at some time and then become not real another time. I don't see how that could work.
Yeah, I think we're assuming that there is some notion of reality all the time. Like, I mean, I'm not talking about the quantum state now, but is saying that there is reality in the universe. And our claim is that the quantum state represents that reality. So.
I think we have time for one more question. John? Or?
I just want, sorry, this, I guess you did cover it, but I want to ask again what the ontic condition is. Can you just reiterate it?
That if you have two probability distributions, and I mean, so these probability distributions correspond to the wave function, and the x-axis here are states in the ontic space, that some notion of reality. So we say that psi is ontic if there is no overlap. That is, if given one real state, we can say that it belongs to this wave function. And it cannot belong to two wave functions at a time. I mean, that's our definition of wave function is real. Do you have another question?
Are you satisfied?
No.
Okay. A quantum state is a state of knowledge. Now, the only question is that knowledge objective or is it just what you yourself know? So we say that it's something objective. That's the definition of ontic versus epistemic.
Right, but I mean, the two probability distributions, you say that they're for two wave functions. What does that mean? Doesn't that mean the wave functions are real?
That you know. Let's say that Alice knows. Alice has some quantum state, and Bob has another quantum state. Right? Maybe both of these quantum states correspond to the same underlying objective ontic state. That would mean that there is an overlap, like in the first example. And that would mean that the quantum states that Alice and Bob have only represent knowledge. They can't be an actual property of the ontic state.
Okay. Tom.
So, John, if you were to give you an example of something that's real, take energy, as Barak mentioned before. If I have two states of the universe, sorry, I have two states that are a different energy, I can say they're different states. Now, if you take, do you know Liouville mechanics? Yeah, roughly? So if I take, I take phase space, I talk about distributions on phase space. Now I can have two distributions that contain the same point, right? So say I have one distribution that has a 10% chance of the particle being in A, 90% chance of particle being in B. And then I have another distribution which has 10% chance of the particle being in A and 90% chance of the particle being in C, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if the particle's at A, I could be in the probability distribution of the first one I mentioned or the second one I mentioned, right? So the state of the particle doesn't explicitly define my probability, which means these are just states that the state itself doesn't represent anything special about reality. Just represents what we know about exactly where the particle is.
Right. Okay.
So an epistemic viewpoint is that the wave function looks kind of like this. An ontic viewpoint would be the wave function something similar to energy, I guess.
Okay.
So I think we should wrap it up now. Let's take one more vote. Put your hand up if you agree that the quantum state is real. Okay, that's four people. And put your hand up if you don't believe that the quantum state is real. Okay, so that's 4 versus 13. But I think we should consider the winning team to be the team that converted the most people. So just to reiterate the results based on conversions, in the first debate, the affirmative team converted more people. In the second debate, the affirmative team also converted more people. And in the third debate, the negative team converted more people. So yeah, thank you very much for coming. It was very nice. And thank you to all. Thank you to all the speakers. And also, I just wanted to thank Lucy and Hardy as well for doing a great job at teaching the students.